Blog Talk Radio.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Melnick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the fantasy football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
Okay, it's April 8th. It's Friday, April 8th. You know what that means. It's time for the All Access Football Friday show. I'm Rodney Tao, here with my boys, Danny Mogagnon. What's up, Dan?
What's up, Rodney? It's pretty good. It's actually the 10th, I think, but that's all right. I don't think it really matters much to me either way.
Yes, excuse me. It is the 10th. We're 11 days from the – we're 2 weeks and a day from the draft. Ralph Mancini is the other guy here. What's up, Ralph?
Reverend Ralph on the attack, back on the scene. Good evening, gentlemen.
Okay, today's show, we're breaking down running backs. All day running back. Ian Johnson, he'll be coming up later. Sean Green, he'll be coming up later. As well as Rashad Jennings, they'll all be coming up later. And in the meantime, we're going to have Eddie White, who's going to help us out with our on-the-clock segments with Indianapolis Colts. And we're going to have Pat Yasinskis from ESPN.com, who's going to help us out with the Carolina Panthers. First things first, NFL news. Things are slowing down right now because we're getting close to the draft. Not a whole lot happening, but our friends, the Cincinnati Bengals, they always give us something to talk about. Interesting signing. Anybody else makes this signing, it doesn't really raise too many eyebrows. But here we go again. Cincinnati Bengals signs Tank Johnson. Is this just another case of Cincinnati overreaching for a guy with a questionable history?
Well, I mean, like you said, I think if it was anybody else making this move, it really wouldn't register much. I think the guy's a solid player. I think he'll help that defense. You know, the little you see from him from the outside, he doesn't seem to be a quote-unquote bad guy per se. So I think it was worth the risk. But like you said, when it's Cincinnati, it's always going to raise a little bit of an eyebrow.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on this one just because Mike Zimmer was the former defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. He happens to know Tank Johnson pretty well, I would say. So I'm thinking that Tank Johnson's going to help out this team. And, yeah, I mean, we could go back and say that that incident that he was caught for, you know, storing so many guns and firearms in his house, that's something that definitely makes you raise an eyebrow. But ever since then, he's pretty much stayed on the straight and narrow. And I think that this signing might actually do them some good because, as Dan mentioned, he is a solid player.
Yeah, and that defense was actually a lot better than what used to a Cincinnati Bengals defense being. And he has kept his nose clean since that time in Chicago. All right. We've had the defensive player of the year last year, James Harrison. He's coming close to actually signing an extension with the Steelers. Remember, this guy was making, I believe, like $2 million a year when he won the defensive player of the year award last year for the NFL. So my guess is he's about to get big money. Then we've got another interesting character here. We got the outspoken and talented Kellen Winslow Jr. on Sirius NFL Radio, weighing in on the Brady Quinn, Derek Anderson battle for starting quarterback in Cleveland. Of course, Kellen Winslow is now with Tampa Bay, so it's kind of interesting that he would remark upon it. But his bet is he's saying that he thinks Brady Quinn should be the quarterback. You think he has any business saying anything?
I mean, I'll let Ralph take the point of he's heard enough from the Soldier Boy in the past, so he should shut up and worry about his new team. But I don't mind hearing it at all. I'd like to. It's nice to get a little feedback from somebody that has caught a football from both of these guys. You know, nobody on the current team can ever take sides publicly with this, or shouldn't really take sides publicly with this. You know, we had Martin Rucker on, who could be replacing Kellen Winslow. He's not going to be able to say, you know, oh, I think so-and-so should be the starter. I mean, you're going to have to get the stock answer of, well, it's the coach's decision, and whatever the coach says, I'm going to be happy with. So I don't mind hearing from another guy. Ralph, tell me why your favorite soldier is out of line.
Well, I'm not going to act as though I'm scandalized over this. I mean, Kellen Winslow is the type of guy that does make outlandish statements, much like his daddy, the Hall of Famer. But the thing is that I really think that he's out of place in making this type of comment. just because, I mean, he's on a different team right now. He needs to focus on being the best Tampa Bay Buccaneer that he could be, and really commenting on the Cleveland Browns does neither him nor the Cleveland Browns nor the Tampa Bay Buccaneers any good. As I said, I think it's out of place, out of line.
Well, Ralph, let me ask you this. As a media guy, though, if you ask him that question, wouldn't you want him to give you an honest answer?
Well, if I were the guy interviewing him, yeah, I would like an honest answer. But really, at the end of the day, I don't think it's within his purview to comment on the Cleveland Browns right now. That's his old team. He's still an active player. He's with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, I don't know. I don't see why he should be commenting on this type of thing.
Okay, we spoke earlier about guns. We've got Marshawn Lynch. He was given a three-game suspension by the commissioner for his gun possession charge, a misdemeanor gun charge. He pled guilty to it earlier during the offseason. We've got Marcus Stroud receiving a 2-year extension from the Buffalo Bills, so they're going to have that big guy anchoring in their middle for a little while longer. Any comments on the Marshawn Lynch thing? Three games. I think the fact that he was contrite and he apologized, I think maybe that dropped a game because the standard seems to be 4 games.
Well, he could still appeal that decision, but I think that actually I was expecting him to be suspended for 4 games, a full month. I think he got off pretty well, but I think I don't care how contrite he is. This is the second major incident that he's been caught for, and really, I don't know how mature this guy is. I don't know if I want to entrust this guy with so many responsibilities in the backfield if I'm running the Buffalo Bills. To me, he's been a major disappointment in terms of character, in terms of leadership, and I think he just he got off lucky by just getting a 3-game suspension.
Yeah, and to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a little luckier, and you know, as he appeals, I wonder if Goodell might even soften it up and take a game down. I wouldn't be surprised if that goes to 2 games. I mean, he's still a young guy. Hopefully, you know, hey, we say this all the time. Hopefully he'll learn from it. Everybody always sounds like they learned from it immediately after they did something wrong. But, you know, then you find the same guys making the same mistakes again and again. So, I mean, it's a wait-and-see game. Hopefully he'll be that guy that does learn from his mistakes. But, hey, as you know, I wouldn't put anything on that.
Yeah, I mean, didn't Brandon Marshall sound like he learned his lesson last
yeah.
year? And did Chris Henry sound like he learned his lesson after his multiple incidents? I mean,
and they might need
him
at the moment.
Again.
You know, they might need him at
sure.
the moment, but you know, eventually the moment's gone, and you got to go on with the rest of your life, and other things crop up.
Well, I can say when I was a kid, and my mother was beating me for doing something that I did. I told her, and I meant it, I will never do that again. And I meant it the time after that, too, and the time after that as well. So,
what were you doing, though? Were you out driving drunk, or what were you doing?
No, it's just the fact that we all...
Were you staying out late past 10 o'clock? I don't think I'd rank that quite up there with my
family.
You know?
This is a family show, so we're not going to get into the details, I don't think.
Okay, now, gentlemen, it's time for our on-the-clock segment. As we know, the NFL draft is now 2 weeks and 1 day away. So we're going to start off with the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are drafting 27th in the first round. Record of the last 5 years is 63-17.
Ooh,
great record.
That's pretty good, huh?
Yes. 12-4 last year, finishing second in the AFC South. Okay, their offense was ranked number 15, defense number 11. Real quick, the last 5 draft picks. This is going to tell you why their record has been 63-17. Mike Pollock. Last year, in the second round, Anthony Gonzalez, 2007, end of the first round. End of the first round, 2006, Joseph Addai. End of the first round, 2005, Marlon Jackson. Second round, 2004, Bob Sanders. All right, so Dan, you're going to lead us off. We're going to go with the booms and the busts. I mean, you just got a bunch of booms right there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, they, like you said, they've done a really good job, and I really like, you know, the job they've done picking up, you know, guys like Matt Gordiano in the 4th round, Tuan Hagler in the 5th round, you know, Charlie Johnson in the 6th round, Antoine Bethea in the 6th round, Dawson, the defensive end, in the 7th round, Clint Sessions in the 4th round. So it's not just those first and second round picks. A lot of times it's the what you do in that day 2 to fill in the depth, you know what I mean? that defense was about depth a couple years ago. You know, everybody knew about Bob Sanders. Everybody knew about Dwight Freeney. But outside of those two guys, there really wasn't a lot of name guys on that defense. But it was really outside of the second half against New England when Peyton Manning went off. It was that defense that carried them to the Super Bowl more so than the offense was during the playoff run. And a lot of that was day two drafting. So you got to give Mr. Polian, Ralph Mancini's guy, a lot of love there. Couple of busts in the third round. Vince Burns, defensive end out of Kentucky, and Quinn Pickock was also a third round pick in 2007 out of Ohio State. A couple of guys didn't work out, but hey, when you're covering a 5-year span, it's impossible not to have two or three busts. I think, you know, this is what, the 2017 we've done. I'm pretty sure this is the fewest busts we've had listed for any team to this point.
I'm pretty certain it is. But lead us off with who's come and who's going from Indianapolis?
Well, you know, as you know, with the Indianapolis Colts and with Bill Polian specifically, he never goes out of his way to bring in the big-name free agent, and that's just the way he operates. He doesn't believe in spending a lot of money on free agents coming from other teams. So this year, he's only made two minor acquisitions. He acquired Mike Dragicevic, a punter who was waived by the Cleveland Browns last season, and he also brought in a pretty decent special teams player, linebacker Adam Seward. So the thing about the Colts is, what's interesting is not the guys that they released, because they really didn't release anybody of consequence once you get past Marvin Harrison. But if you take a look at their list of unrestricted free agents, guys that they haven't signed yet, you look at some of these guys, and some of these guys are major contributors last year. We're talking about a guy like Matt Giordano at safety. We're talking about Kawan Ratliff, who came in handy last year, filling in for Marlon Jackson, the cornerback, who was injured during the year. Dominic Rhodes, a very valuable backup runner, is an unrestricted free agent. And also Josh Thomas, who's been there for a number of years, a good rotational, situational defensive line player. So, you know, these are players that they're going to have to make a decision on. You know, I would think a guy like Dominic Rhodes, a guy like Freddie Kiaho, is an unrestricted free agent. This is definitely a guy that they need to sign. He's still out there, and so it will be interesting to see what decision the Colts make on these players.
All right, well, Rob, give us some of their needs to follow up on who they gained and who they lost.
Well, as far as their needs go, I think it all starts with wide receiver. As I mentioned, Marvin Harrison is no longer there, and quite frankly, last year he wasn't the same player that we've all known and loved in the past few years, and that's also because he's had a number of knee injuries and just cannot run or get the separation that he once did. So the question is that with Reggie Wayne in there and Anthony Gonzalez, do you have and Anthony Gonzalez in particular, is he a starting wide receiver, or is he basically a number three slot guy? Reggie Wayne is getting up there in years. I think that Indianapolis needs to find another guy that can pair up with Reggie Wayne, because in my mind, I don't know if Gonzalez is that guy, is that second guy, is that complementary receiver, that starting number two guy. So I think that it is imperative for Polian to bring in that type of player, a potential go-to guy that could take over for Reggie Wayne, who's in his 30s right now. And although he's a top five, top six wide receiver still, I don't know how long that's going to be the case for. Then you take a look at outside linebacker. As I mentioned before, they haven't signed Freddie Kiaho, who's a playmaking, very athletic, a short tackler at the outside linebacker position. I think that they need to look at outside linebacker just to build up the depth. And one position that a lot of people, a lot of experts don't talk about is over at middle linebacker. You know, they have Gary Brackett over at middle linebacker, who's okay, I guess, but he's not a playmaker. He's not a difference maker. I would look to upgrade that position if somebody is there that's, I don't know, more of a playmaker, more athletic, can give you a little bit more in terms of hitting, in terms of running guys down, in terms of lateral agility. Then you take a look at cornerback. You know, Marlon Jackson, Kelvin Hayden, when those guys are healthy, they're one of the top cornerback duos in the NFL. Problem is that Marlon Jackson got hurt last year during the season. And how is he going to come back? he not only underwent one but two procedures on his knee during the offseason, so it's kind of iffy to really guess whether or not this guy is going to come back at 100%, and if he's going to be at 100% during the first week of the season. So I think unless they bring Ratliff back, I think that the Colts should also be looking at cornerback, maybe bring in somebody just to build up their depth in an emergency situation and look at that position as well. And then finally, what about running back? You know, Joseph Addai, as great and talented as he is, he's more of a slasher. He's not the type of guy that you want on third and one type of plays. Maybe not the type of guy you want on goal line plays. Maybe you want somebody who's a little bit more rugged, a little bit bigger, a different type of back. And Mike Hart was a guy that looked like he could be the type of player who can fill in that position. Unfortunately, he got hurt. A serious knee injury is what he suffered. So you don't know how he's going to come back. So maybe down the line, I think Bill Polian, maybe he should also look at that position. And then finally, you know that Bill Polian is also going to look at the defensive line. If he thinks that somebody is there to help him at defensive tackle, he's certainly going to look at that. But one thing about Polian is, even if there is a number one overriding need, he is not going to reach for that player. He's not going to reach for a wide receiver in the first round if he doesn't think that guy, the next Reggie Wayne, is going to be there. If he's not there, he's going to draft somebody else at another position. So that's what you're pretty much looking at in terms of team needs with the Indianapolis Colts.
I mean, they've got some interesting choices that they can make. I mean, the beauty of a team like Indianapolis is they always seem to be picking from strength because they're never desperate at any one position. But looking at that number one spot, that number one need, wide receivers, you've got guys like Percy Harvin coming up. Could he possibly be the guy who can ride shotgun to Wayne as well as Anthony Gonzalez and eventually take over when Wayne slows down enough? You've got a guy like Darius Haywood-Bey, who's a 6'2", 200-pounder, who's solidly built, and he's got speed for days, clocking a 4.31 at the combine. Or you've got a guy like Kenny Brett, who's a big 6'3", 6'4 guy, the type of guy that generally haven't had in their offense. I mean, that's just a few. You got Hakeem Nicks, Brian Rubisky, Joaquin Iglesias from Oklahoma, Jared Dillard, the little guy, the shorter receiver from Rice. We got Mike Thomas from Arizona. Do you think anyone strikes their fancy?
Well, you mentioned a lot of good names, a lot of top guys. I don't know if those guys are going to be available. You're talking about a guy like Percy Harvin. You know, I would personally be shocked if he falls down that low. But if he's there, that's certainly somebody that they have to take a look at. You know, I think realistically, I think a guy like Kenny Britt could be there for them. He is that bigger receiver. He is a playmaker. So if he's there, I think he's certainly somebody that does have the skills to eventually become that next Reggie Wayne.
Okay, and their second spot that their needs are in is linebackers. Dan, anybody who strikes, who you think would be a perfect fit for the Colts, especially on the outside?
Well, I know when you're talking about the outside linebackers here, you obviously have the two USC guys, Cushing and Matthews. You know, it's questionable whether either one will be here, but you never know. I mean, guys who are supposed to go, you know, from 15 to 20 could be there late in the first round. And if not, Clint Sintem is a possibility, as well as Marcus Freeman. Although I really don't see those guys more as first-round picks. I think at that point they might wait to get a Freeman or a guy like Ty McKenzie in the second round and not use a first-round pick on an outside linebacker.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Freeman. He's sort of that prototypical Indianapolis linebacker. He's not that big, but he's fast. He can cover. So this is the type of guy that Polian would definitely look for in the draft.
I mean, and okay, we have our first caller, our first guest today, and that's going to be from the press box, Eddie White from 1070 ESPN in Indianapolis.
What's happening? How are you?
Hey, Eddie White, thank you for joining us. This is the All Access Football Friday show. I'm Rodney Town here with Danny Mogagnon and Ralph Mancini.
How you doing?
First team's up with the Colts.
Oh, everything's
doing
great. How you all doing?
We're doing well.
How's Augusta?
Augusta's great. I tell you, the weather's a lot better down here in Georgia than it is up in Indiana.
Same for New York, because we got a lot of rain coming outside where we are.
And we can't seem to break 65 degrees yet.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Baseball starting on Monday, so hopefully the hot weather should follow pretty quickly.
We hope so.
All right, Eddie, we were just speaking of the Colts and their needs, okay? What is your feel on what direction you think they're going to go in as far as that late first-round draft pick?
You know, there's two things that are consistent in Indiana. One is we have bad winters, and the second thing is Bill Polian is always going to take the best player on the board. And he's done it, you know, when we all threw our hands up in the air and said, what's he doing taking Dallas Clark? We throw our hands up in the air. What's he doing taking Joseph Addai? We throw our hands up in the air. What's he doing taking Reggie Wayne? And goes on and on and on. He's put a lot behind the offense, of course. That's where the money's invested. And, you know, I'm not talking about Freeney and Sanders. Again, there's some money over on that side of the ball, too. But the bread and butter has been the offense with this franchise. And I think you see the losses that they've had in the playoffs. You know, a lot of the finger-pointing went to the defense when, in fact, defense, you know, they only held San Diego to 14 points. They gave them 17 to field goal in overtime. But, you know, I think Polian's going to take the best guy available. We see a major need for a big guy in the middle. They haven't had a productive big guy in the middle since Siragusa, who was huge, you know, took up all that space in the middle and was powerful. A guy you're hearing a lot of, and again, you don't know what smoke screens are up there and who's lying or what, but if Jim Laurinaitis is there, what a nice fit he'd be with Brackett. You know, Brackett's coming off the injury. And then you hear the talk about the wide receiver. Now, you guys were talking about maybe Percy Harvin, maybe one of the other guys. Maybe if they go defense, do they then go sign a Torrey Holt or something like that? But Bill Polian, at the end of the day, he doesn't go nuts when he loses free agents. He doesn't go and sign a lot of free agents. You know, shoot, the two best guys he signed this offseason were two of his own guys. He brought Kelvin Hayden back into the fold. And, of course, he brought Jeff Saturday back into the fold.
Well, you know what? This is Ralph Mancini, Eddie.
Yeah,
I was just wondering, you know what the funny thing about Polian is that it seems as if he anticipates the team's needs even before they become needs. You know, like, for instance, last year, you know, he drafted all of those offensive linemen, and then what happens? They know they had some significant injuries along the offensive line, particularly with Jeff Saturday to start off the season. And what does he do? He plugs in these young players, and, you know, he does a great job of that. You know, a couple of years ago, he drafted Anthony Gonzalez, and with all the injuries that Marvin Harrison ended up having, you know, Gonzalez was a godsend. And so he just does a great job of anticipating these needs even before they become actual needs.
As good a job as he does, you do a better job with your homework. You're 100% right. You know, we all like, what's he taking all the linemen for? It's like he's Kreskin. He sees things before they happen. And, yeah, I mean, is he tough to work for media-wise? Yeah, I mean, he's blunt, and in a way that's good, that's encouraging. But, you know, he keeps everything close to the vest. I mean, no one leaks anything out of that building. You don't know what they're doing. And there's something up his sleeve. You know, he has a guy that he wants. And, you know, now the one thing they are is they're not afraid to trade up a couple spots to get somebody if they think that's the guy that they need to have. And it's just, you know, we all anticipate in Indianapolis that, I mean, it's like, you know, playing the roulette. It's, you know, if it's up red 15 times in a row, it got to come up black. If you keep taking offensive players, you got to come up and take a defensive player one of these times in the first round. We think it's going to be defense, and we think it could be Laurinaitis.
Well, you know, we spoke about Anthony Gonzalez before. What's your opinion? What's your take on Gonzalez? Do you think he's a slot guy, or do you think he's a legitimate starting wide receiver?
I personally think he's a slot guy. I mean, I think he, you know, they're not going to tell you they soured on him. Remember, for the last 2 years, they've told us there was nothing wrong with Marvin Harrison. I mean, you look with your own eyes, you can see he slowed down. He wasn't the Marvin of old, and the talk out of the Colts facility was, oh, no, the media don't know what they're talking about. He's regular Marvin. Well, we know he wasn't regular Marvin. They're not going to tell us that. I think they might be slightly disappointed in the level where Anthony is right now. I don't think they're ready to give up on him. I think, you know, he has a role. But, I mean, if they come out and throw Percy Harvin in there, then I think, obviously, Percy Harvin's going to fit in and, you know, hopefully become another Marvin. But you could see Anthony continue to be a slot guy, you know, that third receiver. And but to answer your question, I don't think he's at the level now that they had hoped. And I think they hoped last year with Marvin's difficulties that would have been the time for, you know, Anthony to step up and maybe do better than what he showed.
All right. I've got another question for you, Eddie. This is
sure.
Rodney again. All right.
Rodney.
With their dependence, it seems, on Bob Sanders, like he just turns them from an ordinary defense to a good defense.
Do you think there are any plans to kind of pick somebody who can do some of the things that Bob Sanders can do? Because they seem to be a different defense when he's not out there.
No wonder you guys got the best show on radio. You guys do your homework. You guys know more about the Colts than I do. Hey, seriously, the Sanders thing's going to come up. This is the year to watch this, guys. This guy never gives them a full season. And here's the dilemma we have in Indianapolis. Do you continue to pay that much money to a guy who's going to give you 9 games or going to give you 10 games? He may not be there for the playoffs. We joke, hey, let him rest to week 6 of the regular season, then bring him in. You know, how long can you go? I really think, and my partner Bob Kravitz, who's the columnist for The Star, we both agree that this is the year that if he pulls another one of these things where he misses 4, 5, 6 games, he could say goodbye to Bob Sanders. He'll follow Marvin out the door because you can't spend that much money on a guy as good as he is. I know he makes the defense better. I know that. But even last year in some of the games he didn't play, they didn't play so bad. I mean, Ron Meeks took a lot of blame for the Colts. When you look at, I think last year they only allowed a handful of passing touchdowns. They set an NFL record. So, I mean, the defense, it's that definite, bend but don't break defense. But I think Bob Sanders, with the lack of giving the Colts game after game after game productivity, I think this is the year to watch. If he does it again, I think it's his last year with the Colts.
Hey, Eddie, this is Dan, and I got to say, if you're looking for a little side money as a second job, we may bring you on as a publicist for us.
I can do that. Hey, I used to be an SID up at Notre Dame. I can do a little PR work for you.
Let me ask you a question about the draft. I read your column on the website, 1070thefan.com, on the Wunderlich. And what's your take on this? Is it possible that the Wunderlich and not what happens on the football field could actually solidify Matthew Stafford as the first pick and cause somebody like Nate Davis to drop completely out of the draft?
It blows my mind that you're given all these millions of dollars, and I'm looking at the coaches, I'm looking at the scouts. You're paid millions to win football games, and a lot of these guys use this Wunderlich like it's this magic decoder ring. You know, you hold it up to somebody, go, whoop, he has kryptonite, we can't take him. Whoop, this guy's Superman, we can take him. It's amazing how much stock they put into it. Now, I understand intelligence is a very important part of football, but isn't a football player a football player? And, I'm wishy-washy here. I'm going 50-50, and I agree that maybe it teaches you some things, but I think what stands out is the majority of the guys who take it score within a certain set of numbers, and then they're just classified as, okay, they're acceptable. There's the guys like that old tight end from the Bengals, Pat McAnally, who's famous for being perfect scorer in the Wunderlich. You know, that's the small percentage. That's the Tiger Woods of Wunderlich. And then there's the guys who just bomb out. And what I find disheartening is, how do these things get out? These are supposed to be, precious numbers and guarded and secret. And remember a couple of years ago, Vince Young's came out, and then they quickly said, oh, no, it wasn't I think it might have been an 8. They said, oh, it was a 9. Why did it get out in the first place? It was something like that. With Nate Davis, again, he's from Ball State, right up the road in Muncie, Indiana. The guy got an arm like nobody. But, he didn't score well. And, here's a guy that you picked up the Sporting News. I almost threw up a month ago. They had him going to 17th pick overall to the New York Jets. Well, there's no way this kid was going to the first or second round. And now here we are a month later. They're talking about maybe a 7th round selection, or maybe he doesn't get picked.
Well, hey, Eddie, I understand what you're saying. I definitely think that these Wunderlich results are definitely overrated. But, when you take a look at a quarterback that only scores a 6, I mean, doesn't that make you scratch your head just a little bit? Because, look, I understand, hey, if you're a defensive lineman, you're an outside linebacker, it's either, you either know how to rush the passer or you don't. If you're a running back, you either can run or you can't. But when you're a quarterback, don't you have to actually think out there and read defenses? I mean, it's been proven time and again that if you're a quarterback that doesn't know what's going on in front of him, you're not going to be successful. We could take a look at a guy like Dan McGuire, who was picked by the Seattle Seahawks about 15 years ago. And this guy, when it came to intelligence, he was certainly lacking in that department. So I think when it comes to quarterbacks, though, I think we need to make an exception for them when we're talking about Wunderlich scores, don't you think?
I agree with you. I agree with you. But on McGuire, I think his brother also wasn't so smart, I believe. But I agree with you. I think, you know, it's amazing sometimes when you see the quarterbacks that scored low, and you wonder, well, how were they successful in college? I mean, were their coaches that good, or was the competition not that good? And again, how do you measure success? I mean, look at Jay Cutler. I mean, the city of Chicago thinks they just signed, you know, the combination of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, but he didn't win in Vanderbilt. I mean, he didn't win anything at Vanderbilt. Not only didn't win, he was losing to teams that didn't have football. I mean, and so you could say, this guy never won in college. I mean, what is this? So I agree with you that I think the Wunderlich sometimes is maybe overrated. Sometimes it's maybe, you know, not so important, but you have to have some intelligence, of course. I mean, come on, to play quarterback. But, like, maybe you don't have to be the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady level, but you got to have some intelligence to run some of these offenses. And I think what's interesting is what these scouts do at the combine. You know, when they bring the guys in for those, you know, they get those 20-minute meetings with the kids. You know, they put them in front of a chalkboard and say, go. Hey, if we throw this defense at you, how are you going to counter that? And they want to see how quick they are and how well they can score on their feet. And I don't blame them. I mean, there's too much money at
that. These tests are not that hard. You know, we're not asking them, you know, to come up with, you know, the, you know, a big theory or with you know, big math formulas or something. You know, it's basically common sense types of questions.
Yeah, it gets harder as it goes on, and then you got to get as many as you can get. Is it 12 minutes? 11 minutes? 11 or 12 minutes, I think it is, 12, and you go forward, you know, and it'll be, what, 7 or 8 questions is, you know, if you take 3 guys to a restaurant and 4 guys buy, you know, well, how much, you know, it's stuff that, I don't know, maybe we took in high school.
Yeah, okay. Well, Eddie, we want to thank you for giving us some of your time, and definitely thank you for your insight. Once again, I just want to make sure we return the favor, all right? Eddie White with Kravitz on 1070 The Fan. That's in Indianapolis, 3 to 6 p.m. And once again, thank you very much for stopping by.
I tell you, you guys have the best show on radio. I mean it. You guys do your homework, and the people that listen to you are very, very blessed.
Hey, Eddie, thank you very much for that as well. And
all right,
you
man.
Can come anytime you want to.
Great job,
all right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Right.
Bye-bye.
All thank
right.
you.
Right.
Once again, that's Eddie White, 1070 ESPN The Fan in Indianapolis. Give me the rundown on the Colts. One question I really wanted to ask, but we're just getting short on time. If I really wanted to ask it so far, if they can tell the difference between the new coach and Tony Dungy. But right now, let's move on. We've got on the clock, we've got the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers finished 12-4. They don't have a first-round pick this year, right? Their record's been 45-35 over the last 5 years. Offense is ranked number 10, defense ranked number 18. Looking at their first draft pick from the last 5 years, last year, Jonathan Stewart and Jeff Ota. I think they hit big on those two. John Beeson, I think he's doing pretty well. Hit really big on D'Angelo Williams, 2006. 2005, Thomas Davis, jury's still out. Chris Gamble, 2004, that was a good pick. All right, Dan, booms and busts for the Carolina Panthers.
Well, you know, Carolina is another team that's done a fairly decent job of drafting guys, particularly in the early rounds. You got Chris Gamble, first-round pick out of Ohio State, who kind of slipped a little bit to them. D'Angelo Williams was a first-round pick. John Beeson. And, you know, none of these guys were really top-10 guys, and they've all really been extremely productive for them. It seems like the second round is a little bit of a bugaboo for them, whether it's Kerry Colbert out of USC, Eric Shelton, the running back from Louisville, was basically a non-factor for them. And Dwayne Jarrett, it's, you know, only 2 years in the NFL, and I know sometimes receivers might take longer than other guys to develop, but he's looking like he might be another USC wide receiver bust.
Yeah. All right, Ralph, coming and going, their games and losses. Tell us about a few of those guys for Carolina.
Well, there's not a lot there in the games department, in the additions department, because they just don't have enough money to go out there and invest in a lot of these free agents. But they have lost quite a few notable players. I mean, we're talking about guys like Nick Goings, DJ Hackett, Jeff Hangartner, who was a very valuable offensive lineman, Frank Omial, who went to the Chicago Bears. Ken Lucas was released, a longtime starting cornerback. Adam Seward, who we just mentioned before, went to Indianapolis Colts. Look, they went into this offseason with two major objectives. Number one, they had to figure out whether or not they could re-sign Jordan Gross, their left tackle, which they did, and it cost them a ton of money. But it's something they absolutely positively had to do. And the other thing is they need to resolve this Julius Peppers issue. Look, he's an unrestricted free agent. They have to try to figure out what they're going to do with him. He wants to go to another team. And right now, if they keep him on the team and they don't trade him, and he is their franchise player, he's going to cost them $16.7 million. So basically what you're looking at is Carolina has the least amount of money out of all the teams to spend. So the only guy they really
– it's a big loss though, Ralph, because this defense, you know, you think of Carolina, I think your instinct is to think, oh, a team that has a good defense. But really last year their offense was more productive. They were only 18th overall, 13th in scoring, 16th against the pass, and 20th against the rush. I mean, if they lose a guy like Peppers, that's a major loss. They're going to have to make sure they get something back in return.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, no doubt. But the thing is now they have their hands tied because they need the agent to broker a deal. They can't go out there with him being that franchise guy and start making contact with other teams. They need his agent to go out there, broker a deal, and then somehow, some way, then finally try to come up with some type of deal, agree to some type of deal with another team. But that's the situation they're in right now. The one minor free agent addition that they made is they brought in Brett Bazinet, quarterback from the Chicago Bears. And if the Chicago Bears had no use for him prior to Cutler coming to their team, then really I don't think he's that good. So there you go.
Okay, well, we have our next guest up who's going to help us break down the Carolina Panthers, and that's going to be – Pat Yasinski of ESPN.com. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be with you.
Okay, this is your All Access Football Friday show. I'm Rodney Tao. We have Ralph Mancini and Danny Mogagnon with me. First things first, what do you think the needs are of this Carolina Panthers team?
I think you got to start with the defensive line, both defensive end and defensive tackle. I think are the two biggest needs, and you can throw wide receiver in there. I'm not talking about someone to come in and start immediately, but someone that can perhaps replace Mohsin Muhammad in a year or two because he's getting up there in age, and they have to find a viable replacement for him. So I think defensive and defensive tackle and wide receiver are their three biggest needs.
Hey, Pat, Ralph Mancini here. I wanted to throw a couple of other positions at you and get your opinion. What about at cornerback? We mentioned that Ken Lucas is no longer there. They're going to be depending on Richard Marshall to sort of fill in for him. And really, he didn't have a great year last year, so they're kind of taking a chance over there. Then what about tight end? When was the last time Carolina had a legitimate pass-catching go-to guy at the tight end position? I think the last time they had somebody like that was when they had Wesley Walls wearing number 85. And then finally, what about the quarterback position? You know, I know that, you know, they like Jake Delhomme right now. They think he's a winner, and he does have a winning record both in the regular season and in the playoffs. But you got to think that at the very least, they have to look for a guy that could develop down the line. Delhomme is about 34 going on 35. So what's your take on quarterback and tight end?
Well, let's go in reverse order there. Let's start with the quarterback situation. That is one I personally think they should or need to get someone to be an eventual replacement for Jake Delhomme. But I don't know that they're prepared to do that. John Fox and Marty Herney seem pretty locked in on Jake Delhomme. There's even talk of extending his contract, perhaps. And they also like their two backups, Josh McCown and Matt Moore. They view those as guys that could someday take over for Jake Delhomme. So I don't see Carolina doing anything huge on the quarterback front. You could see a guy in the mid or later round, but I don't think anything really dramatic is going to happen there. And the tight end situation, you're right. They have not had a pass catcher at all since Wesley Walls. And that was, I'm trying to remember when Wesley last played for them. I think it was John Fox. First year, I believe. So it's been quite a while. And the thing is, I don't know that they really want that type of a tight end. They want more of the blocker type and a guy that can catch a little bit. they aren't going to throw the tight end an awful lot. But they've been trying for several years to find that guy that can do a little bit of everything well, and they're still looking. I mean, they've got Jeff King and Dante Rosario, but I don't know that either one of those is a long-term answer. So tight end is a possibility. And then corner, they think highly of Ricky Manning. Richard Marshall, yeah. And they think highly of him. They think he's ready to be a starter, and I think they're probably right on that. And Ken Lucas was a good player for them, but he started to slow down last year, and he's getting up there in age. So I think that's pretty much an even swap there. But the situation they find themselves in is now they don't have Richard Marshall as the number three guy, and they need a number three guy. And I don't know that they have any solid options on the roster. So I think corner is a good possibility somewhere in the first three rounds.
Hey, Pat, shifting away a little bit from the draft, what's your take on where the Julius Peppers situation stands? We're based out in New York, and you're talking to three guys who grew up as Jet fans, so we're kind of dreading the possibility of him joining Bill Belichick and being unleashed in the AFC East. Is there anywhere else he could end up besides New England?
Yeah, there are a couple other possibilities at least, and I'm not reporting or saying that any of these are definitely going to happen. I'm just speculating a little bit, but Philadelphia I think is one possibility. They have the draft choices to make a move like that. Dallas is a place that Peppers wants to play, and obviously Jerry Jones has a long history of going for big names. They don't really have the draft pick ammunition to make a deal like that, but you never know. They could get a little creative maybe with a future first rounder or something like that. So those are a couple teams that pop to mind, but I think as we get closer to the draft, what are we, 2 weeks away right now, I think in the next 10, 12 days, we're going to hear some more on Julius Peppers, and I think we're going to hear some other teams popping up. And I'm pretty convinced that something will happen, that there will be a trade of him before the draft or even during the draft. And I think that's going to be one of the bigger stories of draft weekend.
Now, if they do move Peppers, it's going to free up a lot of cap room, but at this stage in time, are they really going to be able to do anything with that extra cap space that they will be getting?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question, because what's left out in free agency? There's not a lot. But the one thing is, and we've all seen it, after the draft, there's usually another round of movement because teams address some needs and some veterans become expendable. So they might be able to get some guys that way. Not anybody that I can identify right now. We've got to see how the draft shakes out. But I think you could see some movement because, that's $17 million in cap space right there. And, this is definitely a team that even though it was 12-4 last year, it definitely has some needs. So I think that they would definitely find a way to spend the money.
Hey, Pat, I found it kind of interesting that you mentioned that you also think that they should look for a wide receiver somewhere maybe in the mid to later rounds. So I guess that means that you've totally given up hope on Dwayne Jarrett. Tell us a little bit about the Jersey guy, a local guy from New Brunswick. Tell us a little bit about him. Has he shown any signs of progress that you've seen or that you've noticed?
Yeah, there was a little bit of hope at the end of last year. The last half of the season, he played a little better, and they put a little more trust on him. They were activating him over DJ Hackett, who was a free agent bust for them last year. So I don't think they've totally given up on Dwayne. It's more like they would still love to see him blossom, and he'll get his chance this year in training camp. But they want to have somebody else there as well, and just in case he doesn't blossom like they hope. But I think I was encouraged by what I saw over the second half of last year. And Dwayne's a kid with good size and decent hands. He had trouble, let's be real honest, he had trouble coming in and picking up the playbook and running routes. And that's not uncommon for a young wide receiver to struggle for a year or two. So, maybe the lights started coming on at the end of last season, and maybe it'll continue to stay on, and he might be one of those guys we talk about as having a breakout season, but obviously there's no guarantees with that.
Hey, Pat, one more before we let you go. And, you know, in addition to the Panthers, you obviously block for the entire division. You know, at this point, like you said, most of the big free agents have come and gone. Which team do you think in the division helped themselves most in this, you know, pre-draft offseason period?
Well, that's an easy one for me. I've got to go hands down New Orleans. Because of my four teams, they were easily the most active. And they did a lot to their defense without a lot of salary cap room, really. And I think that's a tribute to Mickey Loomis, who was able to get some pretty good deals on guys like Darren Sharper, Jabari Greer, Paul Spicer. They're also getting Dan Morgan back out of retirement, who I had the pleasure of covering in Carolina. And I think that's a move to keep an eye on. If Dan Morgan can stay healthy, and that's a huge question mark, but if he can stay healthy, I think he could be a tremendous boost to the Saints. And if they can just get their defense to a level where it's average, middle of the pack, they're going to be a very good team, because we all know that offense is already great, and they just need a little bit of help from that defense. That's the only thing that kept them out of the playoffs last year.
All right. Pat, you want to thank you very much for your insights, your knowledge, and we look forward to hearing from you in the future. Once again, you're
right
for ESPN.com. Anything you want to plug?
No, that covers it. Just buckle down and get ready for the draft, and we'll talk again soon. If you want to talk to me after the draft and do a little recap, we can do that. So.
All right. Looking forward to it.
All right, Pat. Thank you
all
very
right,
much
fellas,
again.
All right, great talking to you. Take care.
All right. Thank you. All right, that was Pat Yastrzemski of ESPN.com giving us a breakdown on the Carolina Panthers, as well as a quick overview of what free agency in the NFC South. I mean, anything you want to comment upon that he said?
No, pretty much, you know, this is a team that was handicapped by their lack of salary cap room, and I think that they dragged their feet for a little bit too much on this Julius Peppers situation at hand. And, you know, as Dan mentioned, as Pat mentioned, you know, even if they do get that $17 million, that extra cap space, what are they going to be able to do? Who's going to be out there? You know, I don't know if they're going to be any difference makers in free agency that are going to be able to come in and make a difference and have an impact on this Carolina team. So a lot of question marks here and a lot of holes to fill with this Carolina Panthers team. No guarantees here. They're a good team, but I don't know if they're a playoff team.
All right, well, we have our next guest up. Our next guest is going to be Ian Johnson from Boise State. I'm quite certain you fans can remember him from a few years ago, the most famous wedding proposal I've ever seen. Ian, how are you doing?
Oh, things are good. Things are good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thank you for joining us. This is All Access Football Friday. I'm Rodney Tao, Danny Mogagnon, and Ralph Mancini. All right, first things first, what do you think? What teams have shown interest in you as far as the draft? Have you had any private workouts and any place that you really want to go that think you fit that fits your talents?
Well, for me, I really haven't had too much in the way of private workouts. I've had a grand total of zero, but I guess that's because I took care of business at the Combine and the East West Shrine Game, so not a lot of question marks left on me, so I'm not too worried about that. And then where would I want to go? I just want to play ball. I'll make my game fit anywhere. An ideal place would be somewhere that runs the ball, like a Baltimore. That'd be perfect for me.
I mean, you did something significant last year because you kind of, in your senior year, you kind of took a step back and shared the load with other runners on the team. I mean, how hard or was that easy for you to do?
I could see for a lot of people that could be real hard stepping back, but for me, I'm a winner. I want to win. And, I mean, that just shows through when it says, I'm a backup from getting the spotlight, and I'm going to play special teams. I just want to win, and I had fun this year because we won games. And in the end, that's all that matters to me.
Hey, Ian, I mean, this is Dan, by the way. I know you guys tell me that. Everybody says that. I talked to Donald Brown yesterday. He told me that too. But, I mean, you're a running back. I mean, if it was your choice, wouldn't you rather have the ball more?
Yeah, if it's winning either way, of course. I would love to run the ball, but – if it's, hey, you run for 100 yards and you guys lose, or, hey, you go cause a fumble on special teams, catch, return a kickoff and do stuff like that and you win, I'd much rather be a team guy that wins than a guy that's all about himself and loses. And that's very true in me. And a lot of people do say that.
So cause a fumble on special teams. So you're telling us you could deliver the hit as well as take one.
Oh, hey, you can turn on the tape this year. I was on kickoff return. I was on kickoff return, kickoff, punt return, and I got a couple tackles to my name.
So were you telling little man Avery there, who was backing you up a running back, that he's lucky you weren't on the other side during practice?
Oh, yeah. No, no matter where you line me up, I'm going to make plays. And if I had to play defenses in the NFL, I'll play defense, and all my old running back buddies got to look out for me.
Hey, Ian, Ralph Mancini here. After your pro day, you were quoted as saying that you weren't satisfied. You said that you still had things to work on. What are those things that you still have to work on, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I'm already behind the eight ball with guys that are already training for or training in camps, but guys have already been in the league for years. So, I mean, I want to be catch up to those guys. Guys that have already honed blocking, guys that already honed their pass protection schemes, and guys that know the speed of this game. Those are things that I'm going to have to keep working on and keep getting used to, and I can't be satisfied with what I've done so far, because what I've done so far has only gotten me through college. I want to be an impact player in the NFL, so I got to work harder.
Okay, well, following that up, what is your best asset? And by the same token, what is the most underrated part of your game?
I think by far my best asset is my ability to understand situations. And that's whether, hey, we've got to be able to throw the ball, and I'm not going to fall off the planet because I'm just a straight running back. I'm a guy that, hey, you need us to block, I'm going to go block. You need me to be able to catch the ball at the backfield, I'll catch the ball at the back. You need me to go influence a curl defender so we can get the curl behind it, I'll go do that. It's my understanding of the game is my total best asset. And I think one of the things that's most underrated about me is probably my understanding of pass protection, because a lot of times I make a block, but you don't understand that, hey, that's not my guy, or just it's not the easiest thing blocking. It's not the funnest thing blocking, but it takes someone that really loves football to go out there and do it and take real great pride in it.
Hey, Ian, since you know, you said you haven't really done much in terms of workouts and stuff, you know, I saw you a couple weeks ago in New York at that photo shoot. I know the next day you were going out to try on some clothes and stuff. Did you get any good threads that day?
I got to try on a lot of great clothes. I didn't get to keep any of them.
What happened, man?
They, I think it was a typo. They said you get to try them on, you don't get to keep them. They all went back. All that Armani, it's just for a picture.
Oh, man. So I guess, you know, maybe after you establish yourself in the NFL a little more, I think maybe you'll start getting some of those freebies. But isn't it funny how it works, though? It's like, you know, the less you need the freebies, that's probably the more they're going to come.
Oh, that's so the truth. I mean, we went to the ESPYs. And, of course, we're the only people that couldn't get the goodie bags, but we're probably the people that could use them the most. It's like, I could never afford any of that stuff, and these other people are like, oh, I'll probably just throw it away. Oh, who cares about this? So it's amazing how
talking about,
that need it.
You're talking about guys like LaDainian Tomlinson, who your coach didn't recognize, right?
Definitely that guy. I'm pretty sure he doesn't need another Vizio TV.
Hey, well, let me ask you, what was it like breaking, you know, passing guys like him and Marshall Faulk in the record books, you know, in terms of crossing the goal line? I know people might hear whack, you know, all-time touchdown rusher, and it's like, oh, whatever, whack football. But, I mean, hey, you passed two of the greatest of the game.
Oh, yeah. I think the best thing for me was, one, none of those touchdowns were tainted by, hey, I'm going to go out and try and run up a game. I always played at when it really mattered, and there were no just garbage time touchdowns. So that was one thing I was real proud of for me. And then the thing that makes it the best is it wasn't my goal to go out there and break a record, or I didn't know until I was within three that I was even close to breaking a record. It was the sheer fact that I came out there to make our team win, and a year when I really took the decision, hey, I'm going to take a lesser role at running back, and I still got that touchdown record, that's what means the most to me. It was doing something team-oriented and getting a personal goal.
All right, so what are you up to these days? You know, we're about 15 days until the draft. What are you doing to keep yourself busy?
Well, I'm still working out every day, making sure when I do get drafted, if and when, that as soon as I'm drafted, I can go get into a camp and be ready, be conditioned already. So that's one of those things. I don't want there to be a slack off between drafted and getting myself ready. I'm ready now. And then other than that, we're in Idaho now, moving all the stuff out of the house we have here in Idaho, and then I'm going to move in with my parents next week, so I don't have any bills. So that's about it. We're getting everything out this house, and we're driving to California.
Have you put away the plumber's belt yet?
I still bring it out every once in a while when we have our own minor emergencies, but no more collecting $6 an hour to do it.
All right. Ian, I have a question for you. As far as when did the NFL become a realistic possibility to you? About how old were you when that occurred?
I think it was more like my sophomore year in college. I really was one of those guys that I was almost gaga-eyed every time a new avenue opened to me. It was like, oh, I could play college? This is amazing. I just want to enjoy this experience. And then I was enjoying everything red shirt year when I didn't even play. Enjoyed my freshman year when I started splitting time. And then it wasn't until my sophomore year where it was kind of like, whoa, we've had this amazing season. We went 12-0, 13-0. That it was really like, wow, there's more here. I really just want to play football till it's not fun anymore. Now it's like, this is so much fun, and I can get paid for it. Oh, let's keep going.
All right. Another question is about this whole drafting process. I mean, what did you think of the whole process from the bowl, the all-star game, basically, to the combine, to the working out? What's your take on this whole thing? Do you think it was necessary, or you learned a lot from it? How do you feel about this?
Definitely learned a lot about the process in general. I mean, you could never explain to someone how it's going to be going through the combine, going through one of those all-star games. First of all, you have amazing athletes with you. It's like your team's good. But the team you're put with when you're at the combine, those guys are – that's the top of the top. It's the upper echelon of everything. And then the regiment they put you through, being there for 5 days, the sleep deprivation, the food isn't what you're used to, so you're trying to eat right still, and then you're not working out for 4 days, and then you're still supposed to perform. I mean, I think it's a perfect mental game to see what type of person you're going to get. Because everyone can perform when everything's perfect. But when things are a little different, when you're not in your hometown, you're living in a hotel, and then they say, now do it. And then everyone's on the same stage. I think it's completely necessary because it's nice to have all the best players on the same field. Because when you take them off their field and say, hey, I'm going to run in track spikes at USC or I'm going to run downhill somewhere else, yeah, you can run better times, but when you compare everyone together, there is no better judgment. And it might be a long process. You might be saying, hey, guys are running for track meet. This isn't football. But it's the best thing you can do outside of having all of us play a football game together, which is kind of hard to do.
Any freebies at the combine?
Any freebies? Oh, we did get a lot of stuff from Under Armour. I mean, that was very nice. I'm still wearing it. I actually got an Under Armour sweater on right now. I mean, they hooked us up. They gave us shoes. They gave us workout shoes, cleats, sweats. I mean, I didn't get any sunglasses like my man Hunter Cantwell, but I'm not jealous. I mean, they gave us tons of stuff. And, I've been enjoying not being part of NCAA only because I can accept stuff like that now. It's been awesome.
Okay, well, Ian, where will you be on draft weekend?
Well, I'm moving back to California, but my parents live up in the hills, so we don't have great reception. So I definitely hate to miss out on that phone call where they're saying, all right, if he answers, we're taking him. Because bad reception, so I'm going to get a part or a hotel room in the city and make sure I have perfect reception, and it'll just be me, my wife, and my PlayStation 3.
Okay, Ian. Well, before we let you go, we like to do something we call three and out. We're going to ask you three quick questions, one from each of us, and I'm going to go first. First down, what was the last movie you saw?
Marley and Me. Not proud
okay,
of it.
Okay, Ian, second down. Your favorite female entertainer? You have Beyonce, you have Pink, you have Madonna. Who's your favorite?
Ooh, I'm actually liking Lady Gaga right now.
Okay.
Interesting choice. Third down, Ian. I know last time we talked, you mentioned you were a fan of House. So outside of the show's namesake, who's your favorite character on the show?
Oh, man. It'd probably be the girl. I always forget her name, but they had her replaced with the girl that's blonde now.
Oh, is it 13?
Huh?
You're talking about 13?
Yes.
All right. I wasn't sure if you were caught up to that because I was going to ask you Cuddy or 13, but I guess you gave me the answer to that one too.
Yes.
Okay. That was basically an inside theme between you two guys because I have no idea what you're talking about. We're not the only people that watch House,
of
man.
Course
that's a popular
not.
Well, show.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's plenty of nerds and couch potatoes out there.
Hey, Ian, thanks for stopping by and joining us. And we look forward to hearing your name called in 15 or 16 days there.
Hopefully 15.
Okay, definitely. We're rooting for you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
All right. Once again, that's Ian Johnson, Boise State running back. We thank him for stopping through.
I'll tell you one thing. If you don't watch House, you should watch it just for the character known as 13. Okay. And you'll know after a couple of minutes what I'm talking about.
All right. I'll keep that in mind. Bye.
I'll definitely do a Google search on her as soon as I get back home.
Okay, well, all right, that's one running back. We've got two more running backs coming up. Scheduled coming up, we've got Sean Green, a Jersey guy, and we've got Rashad Jennings, a guy who went to Pittsburgh and ended up transferring to Liberty State for family reasons. So, I mean, the running back position, I mean, right now, who's number one in the running back spot, do you think?
Well,
without getting too deep into it.
I'll tell you what. I mean, you take a look at a guy like Donald Brown, and this is a guy that I just keep liking more and more as time goes on. To me, in my opinion, and I spoke about this with Dan off the air, to me, he's quite possibly the most complete running back in the draft. So I think that he's definitely a top three guy. I would even venture to say he is the top running back in this year's class.
Really? Okay.
Well, he's our top running back right now. I mean, and he's, I believe, number four on our current big board. So, yeah, we like Donald a lot. I mean, he's a really talented kid. A lot of people are sleeping on him because of, you know, maybe because he's coming out of the Big East, not a big conference. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the highly touted guy that, you know, a Beanie Wells was for sure. And, you know, no Sean Moreno really burst on the scene as a redshirt freshman. Beanie was a guy that everybody knew about before he even played his first game at Ohio State. It was like the anticipation to see is he as good as the hype. So I think even leading up to the draft process, I think that hurts a little bit because really, to be honest, I mean, how many people even knew much about Donald Brown before January? You know, people who don't watch Big East football, UConn's not known for, you know, their football. They're known more for Gino Auriemma
and Jim Calhoun.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for what they bring on the football field. But they're, you know, obviously he's not going to be the only guy. They got another, you know, a couple other more talented guys. Guys like Butler, the corner, could go in the first round. Beattie, the offensive tackle, probably be a second round pick. You got Brown, the outside linebacker, that hybrid type guy who could be a third or fourth round pick. So UConn's producing pretty good talent, and you know, I think people are sleeping on him. I've seen, you know, he brought up Sporting News. They had Donald Brown going in the 50s. The issue I got yesterday. I would be stunned if he got out of the first round. in my opinion.
I'll be stunned if he goes below 35. You know, this is a guy that, you know, he led the nation in rushing, and this is what really piqued a lot of people's interest in this player. But, you know, numbers are numbers. You know, you could do a lot of things with numbers. But when they actually saw him play and saw his breakaway ability, then I think that's what got a lot of people sold on Donald Brown.
Now, I mean, he appears to me to be a very versatile back. So, I mean, he may be one of those guys who can fit most systems. But the thing that I found most interesting is I picked up a magazine that basically started listing the prospects halfway through the college football year or towards the end of it. And Donald Brown didn't even make the top 20 running back, you know, at all. Granted, the fact that he's a junior is a factor as well. So maybe that's why they didn't put him in there, you know. But this guy came out of nowhere, and he appears to be he's going to make some noise for himself. And Dan did an interview, like he mentioned earlier. He did that yesterday. It's probably going to be posted tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to be airing that tomorrow. I did a 14-minute interview with Donald Brown, who's a really bright guy, somewhat guarded, but a bright guy for sure.
Okay, now I also want to do some house cleaning here. As far as our on-the-clock segment for the Carolina Panthers, for the Indianapolis Colts, and and all the other teams that we've done, I believe we've done, 28 now? We've got four more left. You can find all that on NFLDraftBible.com, where we are listing the record, the last five first or second round draft picks, the record the last 5 years, their booms, their busts, who's come, who's gone. So you can check that out there, as well as our various player interviews. We also have printed interviews as well as the taped interviews. So if you're interested, you can find all that stuff there at NFLDraftBible.com. And also, don't forget, we have other shows. Basically, we're humming. I think have we reached the goal of Sunday through Monday yet as far as the shows? Are we missing any days that we don't have an all-access football show?
No, well, we got the show, you know, the Monday Night Lights Monday night, and then Brian Spector with the Football Spectacular has taken over on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So 4 out of the 5 weekdays, we got something for you on All Access Football Radio. But pretty much we do have something every day. We don't have the live shows. We got those 4 live shows. But like you mentioned with the interviews, we got interviews constantly coming. You know, we did I did a spot with Danny Clark that was aired before this show. A really interesting, bright guy. A lot of, things in his life other than football. I mean, you know, we talked about him going over to the Middle East, to the Mideast, to Iraq, and to Afghanistan. He went there with Fitzgerald from the Cardinals, Witherspoon, the linebacker, and Jared Allen, Ralph's guy, the defensive end. They went there. He's got twin brothers who've served in the military, and one is being deployed next Saturday. It's amazing. You know, he said he just came home to Chicago and is just looking forward to spending a weekend with his brother before his brother goes back out. And, you know, he also talked about his charity event, which is next week. So I think that's an interview people should definitely check out and, you know, read more into Danny Clark. You know, he's not a big-name guy necessarily in the NFL, but he's one of those people. It sounds cliche, it sounds corny, but he's one of those guys that is probably a better person than is a player. You know, that doesn't mean to knock his playing skills. It's just, he's a good guy.
No, those are always the guys that you root for, because I know I'm real funny. And to me, it's hard to root for some of the characters we've got in the NFL. But you always want to root for, you always want the good guy to do well. I don't want to fail to mention Scott Daniels, who does various features, articles, as well as he has a Legal Line show on every other Wednesday. And once again, he does features. The last feature, I believe, was Dante Stallworth, and he also did one on Demaurice Smith, the new NFL Players Association president. So you might want to check some of those things out.
If you're looking for draft-related content, NFL Draft Bible has it all. I just recently wrote an article analyzing nose tackles and their spot in the draft, where they're going to go, and how highly regarded they're going to be. So if you're looking for draft-related material, NFL Draft Bible is the place to go. We just have, as I said, a smorgasbord of information in terms of draft data.
Okay, but we were kind of just killing time, hoping that our guests would call in, but thus far, no luck. Waiting on Sean Green and Rashard Jennings. So, fellas, let's move on to the next segment, all right? Under the spotlight, of course, all the running backs, all right? So now we're going to start with you, Ralph. Who are the franchise backs? I mean, we started talking about one of the guys already.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm looking at a guy like Donald Brown, a guy that we've already spoken about. a shifty runner with a low center of gravity. He's a breakaway threat who's explosive enough to get to the second level. His potential is through the roof. I think he's the most complete back in the draft. He led the nation with 2,083 yards and scored 18 touchdowns. The other guy, the other franchise guy I like is Chris Beanie Wells. He's an excellent downhill runner, big and strong, with a Larry Johnson type of build at 6'1", 237 pounds. Tremendous leg drive, surprising acceleration for a big man. The only thing with him is he has a history of nagging injuries that's working against him, along with the fact that he doesn't have natural hands as a wide receiver. But other than that, I like Chris Beanie Wells a lot as one of the top running backs in this draft class.
Okay. Well, Ralph, we're going to get back to that. We're going to get back in a few minutes. We do have our guest. We have Sean Green, the running back out of Iowa. I should mention the Doak Walker Award winner, Sean Green of the University of Iowa. Thank you for joining us on the All Access Football Friday show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay. I am Rodney Tao. We have Danny Mogan-Yon and Ralph Mancini alongside as well. All right. First question. Draft is now 15 days away. Have you done any private workouts? And if so, for whom?
I've been worked out by the Jets and Austin. Took visits out to San Diego, then Arizona with the Cardinals. So I've been here and there.
Okay. We just had on Ian Johnson talking about the combine process and the whole drafting process. What's your view and your take on the whole process, Sean?
I think it's more used for those NFL guys to kind of determine how we perform, under pressure and in a situation where we're uncomfortable, not knowing the surroundings and stuff like that. I think it kind of measures that, and, teams like to see, how you're going to perform under pressure. So I think it's based off of that for the most part.
So how stressful is it? I mean, is it stressful?
It can be if you let it get you stressful, but I think if you just focus on doing what you need to do and, having fun, just, have fun with the guys you're around, I think it's much easier on you than, worrying about running fast and things like that. I mean, you want to be focused, but then again, relax, be yourself.
Hey, Sean, this is Dan. If we went back, a year ago from today and we were talking to you as you were in spring practice, and we told you, in a year you'd be getting ready for the NFL draft. Would you be surprised, or did you think this was a possibility this soon for you?
I mean, I would be surprised saying that. I don't doubt myself, I know what I'm capable of, and, I know the things I could do. But the way just how fast it happened and stuff like that, it is surprising to me.
Hey, Sean, before my buddy Ralph comes in with a question, I just wanted to mention that he's a Penn State fan. Talk about that big win you guys had and how great it was to knock off that undefeated team in the Big Ten.
Oh, no, come on.
Oh, man, that was a great film right there. I mean, you can ask for anything else better in football. You got a top rank. I think they were ranked number three in the nation at that time. It was a home game. It was cold. It was kind of flurrying, snowing and stuff like that. And it was just great football atmosphere, and our fans were in it, and it was a great game. Both teams competed very well, and we got after each other, and the outcome was fortunately went in our favor. So it was a good experience, though.
Sean, what was the atmosphere after that win? I mean, was just everybody in Ames crazy for the whole week?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. I mean, after the win, the fans came onto the field, and I was getting hit over the top of the head by so many different people. I couldn't see where my teammates were. It was just crazy.
I heard that kicker could probably run for mayor and win the election if he decided to.
He probably could. That was probably the best of the year, as far as I was concerned. So, props out to him. He did a hell of a job, with all that pressure on him and still making a kick.
You had enough there, Dan? You got it all out of your system? Okay. Hey, Sean, your former coach, Kirk Ferentz, he indicated that your attitude and determination are two things that make you a special player. Can you elaborate on that? What kind of attitude do you think you bring to the table?
I mean, as far, I think just being dedicated and hardworking, you know, we all, you know, have goals and stuff in life that we want to achieve. And to do those things, you have to be dedicated to what, you, what you're doing, you know. You have to want to do what you want to do. You have to have the mindset of, you know, not letting anything or, you know, a stepping stone bother you. You got to push through everything you come up to. And I think that's what I put in, you know, as far as my attitude is, you know, whatever comes my way, I'm going to handle and still get where I want to get.
Well, hey, Sean, you know, you took a long, winding journey to where you are today. As a matter of fact, to the people out there that don't know this, you were ruled academically ineligible to play back in 2007, and you weren't allowed to play football, basically. That must have been tough on you. How did you fill that void during 2007 when you couldn't go out and play?
Yeah, I mean, that was you know, a big moment in my life where, you know, my life had turned around. Like I said, football is everything to me, and, you know, when that was taken away from me, you know, I went to a community college to get my grades up. I worked at a furniture store, you know, to pay rent and then pay for my classes. It just, that whole, I just worked on my grades, getting them up so I could get back into Iowa and just be back on the team and stuff like that. So I think that whole year was like a big turnaround for me, and it matured me much more as a man.
Hey, Sean, whenever I've watched you play, the thing that I really admire about you is you have excellent vision on the field, and that allows you to hit those cutback lanes that you're very good at. Walk us through what you're thinking and what you're looking for when the quarterback hands you the football. Does everything sort of slow down for you, or do you just act on instinct?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, being a running back, I think everybody acts on instinct. But, you know, in Iowa, we run a lot of zone plays, so, you know, we're basically taking our zone read step, and we're looking for the opening, and we're following our offensive line, and we're cutting off of them, you know. Some linebackers tend to overrun a play, and that's where you get those cutbacks. But having vision is a key, and I think that's a great ability for me. Me from a lot of the backs this year.
Well, when you first got to Iowa, your former coach, Kirk Ferentz, he once said that you would be an awesome linebacker. But back then, you also had guys like Chad Greenway, Jonathan Babineau playing the position. Do you think that you really could have been a good linebacker, or you could have played another position, maybe on defense?
I think so, but, you know, I'm not gonna put my all out into that, you know, because I think I was a running back at heart. But with that being said, you know, I was a football player too. So I think just being able to compete and get on the field, you know, I was wanting to do whatever. And I like the contact. You know, that's what linebackers do. They hit people, and it's a lot of contact. So I think I could have made the transition, but, you know, fortunately I stuck at running back, and it turned out good for me.
Hey, Sean, Ralph talked about, you know, that winding road, and it began back in New Jersey. We're here in the Northeast, and you know, we've had several guys on from Jersey. It looks like it's going to be represented well in the upcoming draft, particularly at the running back position. You know, some of the guys that you'll be competing with for draft positioning are Noshon Moreno, Donald Brown. Do you know any of those guys or any of the other Jersey guys like B.J. Raji who are going to be high picks in this draft?
I don't know any of them, you know, previous leading up to this point, but at the combine, you know, I'm a couple of those guys and talk, so I know a couple of them. Me and Noshon talk a lot, you know, because he was at the College Football Awards when I was there, and then the Doak Walker thing. So I know him pretty well. I seen Donald on a visit, so we talked a little bit, but, you know, I didn't know them beforehand.
So you guys kind of gravitate a little bit towards each other at these different events coming from the same part of the country.
Excuse me, I couldn't hear you.
I say you guys kind of gravitated towards each other when you guys were at these different events, you know, for regarding football.
Yeah, Yep, absolutely. You know, I think those kind of events kind of brought us together. Because at first I didn't know, you know, Noshawn was from New Jersey or Donald Brown. But when those events started coming around and you get to hear where they're from, it's like, wow, we're all from Jersey. So.
All right. Sean, now Dan brought up earlier that you didn't think that you'd be, a year ago, you wouldn't think that you would be declaring for the draft. Basically, what happened, because you kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I believe you're like the only or one of the few running backs, if not the only one, to run for at least 100 yards in all of your games. What happened this year? Was it just you got an opportunity to play?
I think that's, you know, that's the main thing. I got an opportunity to play along with, you know, great offensive line. I mean, those guys, you know, busted their chops and, you know, blocked their behinds off for me, and they did a good job the whole season, and that's why I was able to, you know, get 100 yards every game, along with me getting that opportunity to show, you know, what I could do, because that was like the first, this past year was the first year I got to show what I could do on the starting basis every game.
All right, Sean, well, before we let you go, we like to do this thing we call three and out. All right, each of us are going to ask you one quick question. I'm just looking for an answer there, my man. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Your favorite basketball player all time?
Kobe Bryant.
Okay.
All right, second down, your favorite baseball player. It's baseball season.
Oh, favorite baseball. That's a tough one. I don't really watch baseball like that, but I'm going to have to go with Mike Schmidt.
Okay.
Whoa, Mike Schmidt, old school. Third down. If you were in Dancing with the Stars or American Idol, which competition would you go further in?
Hello, are you breaking up? I couldn't hear you.
If you were in the competition of American Idol or Dancing with the Stars, which one would you do better in?
Probably Dancing with the Stars.
You got some moves? That's what Donald Brown said, too. I guess you Jersey guys got some moves, huh?
Yeah, you know. Like to keep it nice and smooth.
LT style.
Yep.
All right, Sean, we thank you very much for joining us. 15 days from the draft, I think you'll be hearing your name called. I think you'll definitely be hearing your name called. All right, but good luck going forward, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, take care. That is Sean Green, the Doak Walker Award winner, best running back, had the best year of the running backs in the country. You know, besides all the big names, but this guy brought it every week.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, that really stands out more than anything else. The consistency every single week to go over 100 yards. Obviously, you know, you compliment the offensive line, and they got a sophomore that's a left tackle that's going to be a heck of a player down the road, but. Just to do it week in and week out is impressive. There's nothing you can say about that.
And the thing that impresses me most about him is the fact that, you know, he did take a year off from football, and a lot of people would have probably gotten discouraged. A lot of people maybe would have looked to do something else and to get into a different field. But this is a guy who was determined enough to work at his trade to become the best running back he could be, and he's a darn good running back, a big running back. And, you know, don't look at him as a plotter. I think he's more than that. He's got some quick feet. So I think that this is a guy, if he gets in the right system, if he gets paired up with the right running back to complement him, I think this is a guy that can make some big plays at the next level.
All right, before we kill this subject, let me ask you guys, who is he reminiscent of as far as Sean Green?
I mean, nobody really pops out to me. I'm not a big he reminds me of kind of guy anyway, because I think, you know, sometimes you see one thing, or sometimes it's like the body type, but that doesn't necessarily reflect that they're the same type of player.
I'll give you one guy, Jerome Bettis. And I'm not saying he's as good as Jerome Bettis, but I love those quick feet on that big body. So he reminds me a bit of Jerome Bettis.
Okay, well, guys, we're going to return back to the subject of going back to the draft spotlight under the running back, our franchise back. We left off with Donald Brown. All right, Dan, can you give us on Noshawn Moreno?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think him and Donald Brown, I think you could go either way with those two guys as being the number one back in this draft. I think most people would tell you Donald or, I mean, Noshawn or Beanie. We're going Noshawn or Donald, I think. What I like about Noshawn so much is he's just an instinctive runner. You know what I mean? He's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy. but he's just got great vision. He's so elusive. He knows how to pick the right hole, and he knows how to make people miss. So, and he's just an energetic, you know, player on the field. He just electrifies that offense. You know, it's the way he just, boom, pops up as soon as he gets hit. You could see he's got a passion for the game, a drive for the game. And, you know, some people may bring his stock down because of his performance at the combine. But, I mean, to me, if you watched him pull, you knew he wasn't a breakaway back. You knew he wasn't a sprinter, a speedster. He's a guy that runs between the tackles. And, yeah, he could bounce it outside and make a big play. But I think more than anything, he's just an instinctive runner who, you know, makes right decisions and makes people miss. He's got the quickness, the feet, and the vision, not necessarily the speed.
That's the key there. He's not overly fast, but he's elusive.
All right. All right, well, give us – Dan just brought him up. What do you have to say about Beanie Wells?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned before, he's an excellent downhill runner, big and strong, kind of reminds me a little bit of Larry Johnson. I love his leg drive, his acceleration for a man his size. The one thing I'm worrying about with Beanie Wells is the fact that he does has a history of nagging injuries that works against him, and he doesn't have natural hands as a wide receiver. But I think that if he does stay healthy, I think this is a guy that could be one of the premier running backs in the NFL.
All right. All right, looking at the next tier of guys. All right, Ralph, you got a name for us there, correct? I believe it's Andre Brown.
Andre Brown, yeah. I love Andre Brown. He's a thick player with a powerful lower body, strong enough to push the pile as a straight-ahead runner, but also possesses the quickness and agility to sidestep defenders. He stands up blockers when picking up the blitz. Not the speediest guy out there, and doesn't have the best hands in the world, but I think he should definitely excel in a zone-blocking type of scheme. And the other thing about him is that this is a guy who has fresh legs. He never had more than 175 carries in any one season. The other guy that I'd like to highlight is Glenn Coffey. This is a guy who's more of a slasher, has good burst, has skills to make defenders miss in the open field. He's got great vision. He hits his cutback lanes like Sean Green does, but he does it at about 204 pounds. He's lacking in bulk, especially in the lower body, and that's one thing that worries me about him a little bit. But this is a guy that I like. He's similar to Darren McFadden in his build. I think that he definitely has the speed and the quickness to reach the second level, but he won't break too many tackles. But I love his burst, and I like him as a receiver as well.
All right, Dan, what can you tell us about LeSean McCoy, the kid from Pitt?
Yeah, I like LeSean McCoy a lot. For some reason, it seems like people are down on him. I'm not really sure what that's about, and it's like people have gotten down on him in the off season when he hasn't even been playing, and maybe that's why, maybe because he wasn't able to perform at the combine in Indianapolis. Maybe that hurt his stock a little bit. But once again, I think a Big East guy is getting slighted a little bit. This guy is a feature back. That's what he was at college. You know, I like the two guys Ralph talked about, Brown and Coffey. But, you know, what McCoy brings is that he's a guy that's been a feature back at the college level. And I think he's similar to Moreno in that he's got that elusiveness. He's got that slashing style to make people miss. And he maybe gives you a little more burst than Noshon does. He's probably not going to be as effective between the tackles running the football, but may give you a little more big play potential. Hey, you know, he's a guy who could have came back, redshirt sophomore for another year of college, and maybe improved his stock and solidified himself as a first-round guy, maybe the top back coming out next year. But I think if you can grab this guy in round two, I think that's a steal.
Okay. Ralph, what if you're looking for a big back?
Well, I have a couple of guys that I'd like to talk about. An NFL draft Bible favorite, Gartrell Johnson. He's a big back who runs low, has a lethal first step, which allows him to accelerate past would-be tacklers. And the other thing I like about him, he finishes his runs, and he does not fumble the ball. Had only one fumble and 310 touches last season. The thing about that works against him is the fact that he's not very fast, more of a 4.7 type of guy. He lacks that top-end speed that may prevent him from going all the way once he gets past the first wave of defenders. But, you know, I like this guy, big, strong. He's an effective receiver on swing routes. And the other guy whose stock has really dropped significantly in the past year is Arian Foster. He had a poor season, and I think much of that was a result of him just being on a poor team. He's coming off a down season, as I mentioned, was viewed as a second rounder this time last year. He might be a fourth or fifth rounder at this point. But he's a big guy at 6'1", 232, has good lateral ability to avoid would-be tacklers in the open field. He's a slippery running back who twist, churn, and stretch to gain extra yardage as he's being taken down. Good forward lean, more of a short yardage type of guy, not a breakaway type of back. I like his potential. And he has the size, he has the instincts to really surprise in the NFL.
Well, you know what's interesting about Arian Foster, too, is when you watched him in that Senior Bowl week, he looked really good the first couple days, and then he gets hurt. And it's kind of like that's part of the issue with him is durability and can he stay on the field. And he's a bigger back, but he also has excellent hands, too. You know, so he's not just, when you think of, big back, he's got size, but he's also got great hands. It could potentially be, a backup as a first down running back or even providing depth as a third down running back. I'm going to go with Rashad Jennings on this one, the small school guy out of Liberty who was supposed to call in tonight. Hopefully we'll be getting him on shortly. But, this is a powerful, powerful runner. Brings, as good a size as any back in this draft. Maybe not tremendous speed, but I think he showed you throughout the process that he's got enough speed and enough quickness to make people miss as well. So he's not just a brooding back that's going to put his, shoulder down. But, I really think Jennings could be – he's in the conversation, I think, with Ramsey Barden and Lawrence Sidsbury in terms of who's going to be the best small school prospect coming out this year. I think he really, really helped himself a lot in this offseason, in this draft process.
All right, well, Dan, start us off. Give us how about some of the third down backs?
Well, I mean, a couple of third down backs, obviously these guys are a little smaller. Durability is going to be an issue with this guy, with these guys. The three guys I like a lot are Jeremiah Johnson, Mike Goodson, and Devin Moore. I mean, everybody knows I'm a big Devin Moore fan. If you've heard this show a few times, the kid out of Wyoming, combine snub, excellent hands, great speed and burst, one of the best big play backs in this draft. He can block too. He's got good strength. So he's not just, that shifty back that comes out of the backfield and catches balls. He can block as well. He can run for you. And I think he's going to be a steal wherever he goes. And he's going to go higher, guaranteed. He's going to go higher than people who were at the combine, who the NFL thought were better than him. He's going to surpass some of those guys. Jeremiah Johnson out of Oregon, again, not the biggest guy. He would go – what hurts him a little bit is he doesn't really have that explosive speed that people like. If people want to see a balance, it's like, all right, if I go down a couple of notches in grading in size, I want you to go up a couple of notches in speed. He doesn't really counteract that lack of size with speed, but he's still a big play guy, and he's an outstanding receiver. Hands are not a question for him coming out of the backfield. And then finally, Mike Goodson, who probably has the most to prove in terms of his pass catching abilities, but I think also at the same time, I think he's got the most upside out of this whole group. A lot of potential here. Pretty surprising that he left school. In fact, he wasn't even on the initial list with the NFL when they released it in terms of an early entry guy at Texas A&M. His career never just got going. He showed so much promise as a true freshman with the Aggies, highly recruited kid, a lot of ability, but his career never really took off completely. He had solid seasons, but not the type of breakout seasons you really wanted. So I think, if you can grab this guy in the third or fourth round, you may really be finding a diamond in the rough and maybe somebody who's more than just a third down back.
Oh, Leon Johnson comes to mind. You said third or fourth round. All right, Ralph.
Well, I'll tell you, I think one of the more underrated players in this upcoming draft is Cedric Pierman out of Virginia. I love this kid. He's quick to the hole. He's very agile. And despite his size, he's strong enough to run inside and certainly quick enough to bounce his runs to the flanks. Very soft hands. The one worry about him is his hands. He has small hands, the size of his hands, that scouts and GMs worry about. The other thing that they worry about is he missed half of his 2007 season with that Liz Frank injury. But I think he should be a terrific change of pace option at the very least. The other guy I like, and if you're looking for a good receiver, I think the best receiver in this draft is Corey Sheets out of Purdue. This guy caught 80 passes as a Purdue Boilermaker. He's versatile, and he also played in a spread offense at Purdue where he often lined up as a slot receiver. So that versatility is just going to give him more value. He has outstanding lateral quickness, acceleration, and home run speed. He may need to bulk up a little bit, and he isn't the best blocker out there. But otherwise, I think Corey Sheets is a terrific player.
Oh, earlier I would say Leon Washington. I think I said Johnson. Well, anyway, the best of the rest.
Leon Johnson wasn't a bad guy either.
No,
he got hurt
out of North Carolina.
Yeah, University of North Carolina.
But I was speaking specifically about Leon Washington, the fourth round draft pick for the Jets.
I think Leon Johnson was a fourth round pick as well.
Okay, so I was. Oh, I should have shut up. I wasn't right. Okay, God. Well, the best of the rest. All right, you start us off, Dan. Some of the better guys that we haven't talked about yet.
Well, let's start off with the guy that was on with us earlier, Ian Johnson, who's really, you know, proved people wrong in terms of the criticisms of his game. You know, he's not strong enough. He's not fast enough. Well, he proved everybody wrong with his performance at the combine. He told us he would before he was on, I think, one of our player spotlights with Beau Marchant when he interviewed him, one of his first interviews. And he told us he's going to, you know, surprise everybody at Indianapolis, and he did. A productive guy. You hear him talk. It's not just talk. You know, it's legit. I've interviewed him during the season, and, you know, he was fine with his diminished role there because he felt it was what the team needed. It became more of a passing team. It became more of a spread the ball around. He pointed out the fact that guys like Clady weren't there anymore, and they weren't just a grinded-out running team like they were the previous 2 years. They lost a couple other offensive linemen. So it shows you he's a bright kid. He understands football, too. It's not just, you know, he's a smart guy. He's got football smarts. He understands what the game is about. And he's going to do anything you want to contribute. So, you know, talking about day two, getting him, I think he's going to bring good value. He's got good upside. Durability-wise, I'm not sure if he's ever going to be a full-time back, but I think he could definitely be part of an excellent 1-2 punch. A guy who has been part of a 1-2 punch for the last couple of years is James Davis out of Clemson. And, I mean, who would have thought last year at this time that James Davis would be ranked somewhere in the 20s, you know, around 20, you know, high teens to the early 20s in rankings of running backs. He was a guy that so many people thought would be a top guy. I've seen people projecting him as a first-round pick. He still has a decent combination of size and speed, I think, for where he'll fall to you. I think what hurts him is his lack of versatility, not much of a pass catcher. You know, at the Senior Bowl, very disappointing in his blocking skills,
yes.
Something he never really showed there. And obviously because C.J. Spiller was more of the guy that will come in passing situations. But, you know, I think that hurts him because he doesn't give you that versatility. And then finally, a guy that I think people are underrating is Aaron Brown out of TCU. I think part of the reason his stock isn't that high is because he just really didn't get the football a lot in college. I believe, you know, I didn't get a chance to go over the numbers recently, but, you know, off the top of my head, I think his season high in carries this as a senior was like 15 carries or 14 carries. But the couple of times he was able to get even into the mid-teens, he was very productive. You know what I mean? He had a big performance against Ian Johnson. They played in a bowl game against each other, TCU versus Boise State, one of the better bowl games, and both of them kind of showed what they could do. And, you know, he's one of the if you tend to notice the guys I pick, I don't necessarily always go with the biggest guys or the fastest guys. I like guys who are just those instinctive type runners, you know, Curtis Martin, Emmitt Smith with the Cowboys. These guys weren't going to wow you with measurables where you could say, wow, he's so fast or wow, he's so strong. It's just it's such an instinctive position. Either, like Ralph said before, sometimes with a running back, either you have it or you don't. You have that knack for finding the hole. You have that knack for making people miss. And I think, you know, Aaron Brown is one of those guys out of TCU who's going to be a late-round guy, but I think he's got a knack for making plays. And, you know, similar to Ian and similar to James Davis, he's not going to be a full-time guy, but I think he's a guy that in a secondary role is going to be a productive player in the NFL.
Yeah, I think instincts and I think technique is very important for these running backs. You see a lot of these guys, talented players, athletic players, a lot of times, their technique is like totally off. You know, they tend to run tall a lot of times, and if you run tall, you're not going to have a long career in the NFL. The guys that produce, the guys that have 9, 8, 10-year careers are the guys that know how to anticipate the hit, make themselves small. And these are all things that count. These are all things that make you a good running back.
I think that's one of the concerns that some people might have with a guy like Beanie Wells.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's a reason why, you know, people always talk about the quarterback bust, but, you know, that's the predominant thing, especially because, you know, so many of these quarterbacks go top five that bust. But there's a lot of running backs that bust too. And, you know, guys that have it all, apparently, coming out of school, whether it's a Cedric Benson, whether it's a Curtis Enos, big guys with speed, look like they have the whole, you know, the total package, and then come to the NFL and it just doesn't pan out. So, yeah, I think those are things that get underrated. And in college, you can get away with just having that. If you're just that much bigger and that much faster than everybody else, you can get away with it. That's enough in the college level. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to be that much bigger and that much faster than guys in the NFL.
But you brought up the perfect example with Curtis Enos, because in college, this guy was a truck. Nobody could bring this guy down. But then at the next level, you know, he was going up guys that were just as big and just as strong, if not stronger than him, and he really had a hard time adapting to the NFL. By the way, the guy here that I like in this category is Bernard Scott, a small school guy, a legendary college career at Abilene Christian, back-to-back 2,000-yard seasons with 39 and 34 total touchdowns, respectively, in his last 2 years. He's instinctive, sensational vision, elusive, quick, a natural runner, and runs with balance. He also runs good routes as a receiver and has very soft hands. The negative, the one negative about this guy, and it's a pretty big negative, is the fact that he was arrested at least 5 times. And these are for really, like, really petty things that a guy who's 25 years old shouldn't be caught for, shouldn't be caught doing. He was caught for stealing an iPod, lying to an officer, and fleeing police officers. Yikes. You know, I don't know, man. I mean, those are things that raise a huge red flag for me.
Cincinnati Bengals.
Maybe.
I agree with you, Ralph, too. I think that's going to hurt his stock. Because I think, you know, he might not be Rashad Jennings, but I think he's very, very close. And he's another guy, too, that from a small school perspective, he looked like he belonged with the big boys.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, whether it's the All-Star game or the Combine, he was right there with the guys.
He looked very comfortable.
Yeah, he was very impressive, but I think you're right. I think those things are going to be very cautionary to NFL teams.
All right, what about Javon Ringer? What's your take on Javon Ringer?
You know, the thing about Ringer is a lot of times people look at his size and then might think, oh, boy, look at his yards and look how many carries he's getting. Oh, this guy might be the next Brian Westbrook. He's not that type of runner. He's instinctive. He's an intelligent runner. He runs with a lot of patience by setting up his blocks. So he is smart, and I think that he can be a decent guy. But, you know, to me, he's just not quick or elusive enough in the open field. He's a tough guy, but I don't see him as being a spectacular player, a big play type of guy. To me, he's not that type of player.
No, but he is a tough guy, though. He's a lot tougher and I think a lot better running between the tackles than people give him credit for. I think you're right. People assume, oh, he's a little guy, so he must be a speed outside guy. That's not always the case. I think he did most of his best work running, between the tackles.
All right, Dan, give us some of your super sleepers.
Super sleepers. These are guys that, you know, there's a decent chance they'll go undrafted. A guy, Brad Lester, who, you know, going into the year was probably in the top 10 senior running backs of most people. The problem with him has simply been staying healthy. You know, he's had trouble staying on the field throughout his career, and that continued in his senior season where he really didn't get a chance to show everything he could do. And that's, I think, what's going to keep him from getting drafted. But I think he could be a real sleeper in terms of an unrestricted free agent, where he's a guy that could actually make a roster and contribute on the field. The same could be said for Khalil Bell out of UCLA. Just cannot stay healthy, you know. And he's, again, he's not a big guy. He's not a fast guy. But he does very well, you know, like the shuttle times, the cone times. He does well in those. And a lot of times those translate better to running back success than straight 40 times.
Three cone drills.
Exactly. I mean, when you're weaving your way between the tackles and trying to make people miss, you're not running a straight line. So this kid's got the quickness and he's got good vision. But, wow, I mean, a guy that's just every year he gets hurt and misses playing time because of injuries. So, but, you know, as an unrestricted free agent, he's a guy that if he does stay healthy, I think he can contribute. And then the kid out of Indiana, Marcus Thigpen, who I think might get drafted, this guy is a home run hitter 100%, and he can also contribute as a return guy as well.
All right. Ralph, some of your super sleepers.
Well, I'll give you one guy that, in my opinion, is a big-time sleeper, and that's Marlon Lucky out of Nebraska. much like Javon Ringer, who we spoke about before. He's a patient runner. He picks and slides his way across the line before hitting the hole. He's agile. He's impressive in the open field. He adjusts well to poorly thrown passes as a receiver. The thing about him that he to improve on is his technique as a blocker, and he has to get lower to avoid excessive punishment. So he needs to work on that technique a little bit. But otherwise, I think this guy definitely has the skills to pay the bills.
All right. Well, how about fullbacks? Which fullbacks are most likely to be drafted? I mean,
well, these are the guys that I like.
Okay.
I like Brennan Sutherland as the traditional type of fullback. He specializes in blocking on the move, and he's also athletic enough to catch the ball at 242 pounds, and he can also hit the hole as a runner. He needs to develop more of a pop as a lead blocker. The other concern about him is that he suffered a fractured foot in 2008. Another guy I kind of caught my eye is a guy that we spoke with earlier in the year, and that's Conridge Collins, son of the former Patriot Tony Collins. This is a player, a fullback, who can go in motion. He can line up in the I formation. He sustains blocks and has quick feet for a big guy who's over 230 pounds. He's a good power runner. He gets his pads low to move the pile. I like Conridge Collins a lot.
Okay. Dan, who are your fullbacks?
Well, hands down, the top fullback and the first fullback off the board is going to be Tony Fiametta. That's almost as big a lock as any guy at any position in terms of who's going to be the first guy drafted. He's a complete package. You know what I mean? He's obviously not a running threat. I mean, you know, and I don't think, to be frank, I don't think teams even want a fullback that can run because they're not going to give him the ball that way anyway, even if he can. They're just going to waste that skill. But he can catch the ball out of the backfield, and he's got enough size. He's a lead blocking type guy, so he can kind of do both for you. Quinn Johnson, I think, is his equal as a lead blocker, not really a guy that's going to do much with the ball in his hands, but he's a devastating blocker, a guy that you can just, you know, have your running back follow into the hole, and he's going to take out a linebacker for you. If you're looking for a guy that's a little more athletic, maybe a little better hands, we go to the small school product, Marcus Branson, who Nathan Brown told us a little bit about last week. He threw a lot of footballs to him. He's got good hands. You know, some people view him as, is he a tight end? Is he an H-back? Is he a fullback? So he's kind of that versatile guy that could kind of move around, and I think he's going to get drafted as well.
Okay, well, gentlemen, how about our stars of tomorrow?
Well, I'll give you my one shining star here, and that's Javid Best out of California. You want fast, you want quick, you want incredibly explosive. That's Javid Best for you. Arguably, he's the most exciting player in college football.
Heisman favorite for next year?
Could be. He's up there. He's going to be up there. And the thing is that he not only has great 40 speed, but this guy has long speed. He was a 100-meter state champion in high school. He's got great work ethic, good attention to detail, gained 1,500 yards, 15 touchdowns with an 8.1 yards per carry average. All I have to say is if you like Percy Harvin, you will love Javid Best.
I'll give you my best senior for next year. That's probably going to be C.J. Spiller, the kid out of Clemson. How he does this year, how he handles the extra load, I think is going to make a big difference. But he's definitely a big play guy, great hands out of the backfield, can help you as a return man. He kind of reminds me a little bit of a Felix Jones, who was a first-round pick last year coming out of Arkansas as a second back. So I think C.J. Spiller is going to be the top senior for next season's draft. And then, you know, you got a few underclassmen, a guy like DeMarco Murray, who's going to be a redshirt junior. He's a guy that a lot of people think would have left this year if he didn't have that knee injury. You know what I mean? He could have been a redshirt sophomore. He could have joined Knowshon Moreno and LeSean McCoy as a redshirt sophomore. He's got, you know, he's got good size,
mm-hmm.
a powerful runner, and he's also got the breakaway speed, a freaky athlete. You know, legend says that Bob Stoops, you know, offered him a scholarship off just watching him slam dunk and the type of athleticism he had. So I think next year you're going to see a lot more impressive combine numbers. I think there's better athletes at the running back position, whether it's a senior like Spiller or the underclassman like Murray, Javid Best. Evan Royster is a speedy guy out of Penn State. Joe McKnight is another, an explosive guy. really hasn't taken off. He hasn't lived up to that Reggie Bush billing as of yet, but he's a guy that has potential. And, you know, even further down the road, keep an eye on Caleb King down at Georgia, who could have a real breakout year replacing Noshawn Moreno, who left, you know, with 2 years of eligibility remaining.
Okay. Well, guys, right now, let's go to school on the running backs, all right? First off, greater than, less than, Brandon Jacobs touchdowns or Brandon Jacobs receptions?
Oh, sorry, Rodney. We actually had an update. I didn't get you the updated rundown. That's my bad. We're going with Brandon Jacobs yards or Derek Ward yards.
Okay.
And I think the knee-jerk reaction in here is going to be, well, it's got to be Brandon Jacobs, right? But, you know, Brandon Jacobs only ran for about 40, 50 more yards than Derek Ward did last season, and he had significantly fewer carries. And, you know, neither one of them has really proven themselves to be, you know, a full-time type back. So both of them have to answer those questions, whether it's Ward going to Tampa or Jacobs staying in New York. I'm going to go for an upset here. I'm going to go with Ward and say he's going to rush for more yards in Tampa Bay. I think Jacobs is a big guy. He's had 2 years already, the opportunity to be that quote-unquote feature back, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy and has barely cracked 1,000 yards as that number one guy.
I'm going to go with the chalk here and say that Brandon Jacobs beats him in yards and in touchdowns. You know, the thing about Ward is that he's also going to have to contend with Ernest Graham in Tampa Bay, so he's not going to be the only show in town. I think Brandon Jacobs is the better back. I think he's going to gain more yardage. I think that overall, I think Brandon Jacobs is the more proven guy, whereas Ward, he's looked good intermittently in spots.
I mean, you know, one guy has 1,000-yard season, the other guy has two. It's not like Jacobs has been...
But I think Ward has really helped out a lot by the fact that he had Jacobs in front of him, you know, to kind of soften things up for him a little bit. You know, I think he's going to be asked to play a bigger role in Tampa Bay. And I'm not saying that he's not going to be up for it. I'm just saying he's going to have a harder time with a lesser team around him, lesser players. And I think that offensive line in New York is a little bit better when it comes to run blocking as well.
Okay. True or false? We'll start with you, Ralph. Adrian Peterson will repeat as the rushing champion.
Yes, yes, and yes. Adrian Peterson is hands down the best running back in the NFL when it comes to size, when it comes to speed, breakaway ability, and he has a team around him. You know, the Vikings have really upgraded at the quarterback position. They do have a number one wide receiver now in Bernard Berrien, and they have an outstanding offensive line. All the components are there for Adrian Peterson to have an outstanding season, dare I say a 2,000-yard season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, all day, every day, I'm going with Adrian Peterson. I mean, you could ask me this question probably next year and the year after that and the year after that, and he's going to be my pick unless, you know, the injury bug bites,
sure,
which is a factor with him, and it's a big reason why he slipped, you know, in the draft and wasn't a top five guy. He slipped to number eight. But if he stays healthy, man, I mean, nobody combines speed, power, size the way this former Boomer Sooner does.
All right, Dan. The fill in the blank here. The have the best 1-2 punch.
Well, I'm gonna go with the Carolina Panthers on this one. You know, they combined last season for over 25 touchdowns. That's D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. Can I? You know, what was the nickname again?
It's Turf Toe Johnny.
Turf Toe Johnny. What was the nickname for the duo? It's escaping me now. I'm gonna have to look it up. But yeah, they combined and for almost 2,500 yards. I don't see why that's going to change.
Smash and dash.
Smash and dash. That's right. Smash and dash. But the man from Lendell White said their identity is theft because he said he already dubbed himself and Johnson Smash and Dash. So he said they stole that nickname. But I'm going to go with the Carolina Cats. I think they have a nice compliment. Stewart's the bigger guy. D'Angelo Williams is the home run threat. I could see, you know, D'Angelo Williams 1,500 yards go down a little bit, and Stewart 700 yards go up a little bit. So we talked about Jacobs and Ward, who went for 1,000 yards last year. I could see this duo going for 1,000 yards this year, and a big reason is the offensive line. You know, Gross, Oda, they shorted up with free agent. They shorted up by keeping their guy, and they shorted up with the draft. So I think it's a running team. And I don't see why either one of those guys takes a step back.
And the other thing that really helps them is the fact that the Carolina Panthers are really committed to running the ball. They're not one of these teams that you're going to see spread out a lot with five receivers or four receivers.
Do they even have five receivers?
Well, that's another reason why they don't, because they want guys to block. They want to be committed to the run. If you take a look at how they play, even their receivers do a lot of blocking. You know, you could arguably say that Masih Muhammad is probably the best blocking wide receiver in the NFL. So this is another reason why I think they're going to be the most productive duo in the NFL. And with D'Angelo Williams, I mean, this guy really impressed me. And one of the secrets why, one of the reasons why he really took that step up last year is because the year before, when Vinny Testaverde was playing for the Carolina Panthers, he really preached to D'Angelo Williams the importance of staying in shape at all times and eating right. And you know, I think that D'Angelo Williams, he really took that to heart. And he really developed as a football player thanks to our guy, Vinny Testaverde.
Vinny from Belmont.
That's it.
Okay, now, and also Hines Ward might have something to say about their best wide receiver. But multiple choice, guys. Most likely sophomore slump. Our choices are Steve Slayton, Matt Forte, or Chris Johnson. Yeah, Dan.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had to have a good year to have a sophomore slump, and these guys outshined even Jonathan Stewart and Rashard Mendenhall, who was injured, and Mr. Darren McFadden. So a lot of the first-round guys didn't really have the big years. Slayton was sixth in rushing, Forte was seventh, Chris Johnson was eighth. You know, Chris Johnson's been my guy since last season, so I just see nothing but good for him in the future. I think he's going to step it up even more next season. You know, explosive running back with the speed, catching the ball out of the backfield. So that, to me, leaves it down to two guys, either Slayton or Forte. Hey, I liked Forte a lot last year. Slayton proved me wrong, but I don't want to be one of those guys that jumps on the bandwagon at, you know, after the fact. So I'm going to stick with Forte is doing better. And, you know, as Ralph mentioned with Minnesota improving their passing game, hey, maybe Jay Cutler won't put up the numbers he did in Denver, but he'll make things easier for a guy like Forte, who started to wear down a little bit at the end of the year. I think teams really focus on stopping him.
Sure.
Now with Jay Cutler there, I think that helps him. So, and Steve Slayton still has the durability question mark, which could bite him this year. So if I had to pick one of the three, I'm going to go with Steve Slayton.
And the other thing that about Matt Forte, the reason why I don't think he's going to have a sophomore slump is because his offensive line is going to be much improved as well. They brought in Orlando Pace, and they also brought in Frank Omiyale from the Carolina Panthers. I think their offensive line is going to be better. I think their quarterback's absolutely going to be better. And you know, as far as Chris Johnson goes, the Tennessee Titans have already said that they're going to make a bigger commitment to getting this guy more carries.
He's their guy. He's their best player on offense.
Exactly. And they've soured on Lindale White. You know, this is a guy who can't stay in shape, doesn't have the best attitude, doesn't have the biggest work ethic. So I think by default, I think Steve Slayton is the guy who has the greatest chance of hitting that sophomore slump. And let's not forget, Houston does not want to give him all those carries that they gave him last year. They want a complimentary type player to come in, and you could bet that they're going to bring in somebody like that, whether it's in the third round, fourth round, or fifth round. They're going to bring in that 1B type of runner to put alongside Steve Slayton.
Okay. Rob, let's start with you here. Short answer, who is the best running back you've ever seen?
Best running back I've ever seen? Freeman McNeil? No, I'm joking. You know, This is a tough one. I'm gonna go with Barry Sanders. You know, there were a lot of runs where he would stop for no gain, and he certainly wasn't with the best team out there. But he was just the most exciting back out there, a guy that could put on just moves upon moves upon moves. And it was the best big play running back. I'm going to have to go with Barry Sanders.
All right, Dan.
I can't disagree. I mean, I think unless you watched Jim Brown play, I don't see how you go in another direction other than Barry Sanders. I mean, he may not have the rings that Emmitt Smith does, but, you know, I think a lot of that obviously is a team. I mean, he didn't have any of the guys around him that Emmitt did, except for just having a good receiver like Herman Moore with him. But, I mean, come on, Barry Sanders, man, this guy made moves that no one else has ever made, and I wouldn't be surprised if in the future that will make. You know what I mean? I don't think there's going to be another Barry Sanders. I think it's a joke and it's laughable. When I ever hear anybody compare somebody to Barry Sanders, it's like, are you kidding me? You can't compare people to Barry Sanders. He did stuff nobody else could do. Nobody could stop, start,
yeah.
cut, go like Barry Sanders could. Other people try to do it and have come to the NFL and tried to do it like a Reggie Bush unsuccessfully. So to me, there's one and only Barry Sanders.
Okay. I'm a little older than you guys, so I'm going to tell you. My guy's Walter Payton.
Okay.
Talking about the guy who could do everything. And there was nothing like watching Walter Payton fly over the line of scrimmage to score a touchdown. And, I mean, he was one of those guys holding that ball out loose like a loaf of bread, but he rarely fumbled. He wasn't the biggest guy, wasn't the fastest guy, but, boy, was he a tough guy. I love Walter Payton, his sweetness himself. All right, it looks like we're running out of time. We're down to 15 seconds. We want to thank you for joining us at the NFLDraftBible.com. Watch this at All Access Football Friday show. Don't forget to check out NFLDraftBible.com for everything that we talked about. You can see the on-the-clock segments and the various interviews. Have a good night.